Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
The sounds of summer fill the air. And on this July 4th weekend, we celebrate the spirit of independence and independent thought. All over our country, in parks large and small, there are fireworks, some simple, some exquisitely elaborate, and they are accompanied by music, played by small community bands, recorded segments engineered by DJs, and the Supreme Pops concerts, played by large symphonic orchestras with grand medleys of film, show music, and popular hits. The Pops concert was the brainchild of Arthur Fiedler, conductor of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. Maestro Fiedler felt that all people, not only classical aficionados, deserve the experience of hearing well-known classical works and even popular show tunes played in concert by legitimate symphonic orchestras. The idea took hold, and today, the Pops concert is part of the annual concert season of orchestras all over our nation. A really American phenomenon, we felt it only proper to bring you a sampling today. We went back into our archives to unearth conversations with conductors of two of the finest Pops orchestras, not only in our country, but in the entire world, Keith Lockhart of the Boston Pops and Eric Kunzel of the Cincinnati Pops. Welcome to Crossover, Keith Lockhart. What a joy to have you here.
Thank you, Joan. It's great to be with you.
I can only picture you in a running suit. I was so thrilled with that album of the Running Wild or Runnin' Wild
Runnin'
album.
Wild.
Yeah. But I think that you are someone that does. You have kind of taken the Pops and spin them around, although they were unique when they first started and what they did as far as the cafe-style concert is concerned. But you've really taken them in a certain direction, and I must say it's very, very exciting, the work that you're doing.
Well, thanks so much. I mean, it's been, for me, an amazing honor. The Pops is such a unique institution. It's really the granddaddy of all kind of populist orchestras. I call it the ultimate outreach ensemble. We perform so many concerts for so many people and over such an incredibly wide variety of music. We started with Glenn Miller, but you know that was six albums ago, and
was
we've gone
it?
Almost everywhere else since then to the Latin album and the Celtic album, both of which got Grammy nominations, and on and on and on.
The personnel of the Boston Symphony are members of the orchestra, is that right?
They are, yes. We actually have two orchestras that are the Boston Pops. And listeners or viewers will know them from the Boston Pops Orchestra, which is the personnel of the Boston Symphony, is the orchestra that you hear on our recordings and you see on Evening of Pops on PBS. But the orchestra you see on the 4th of July is the Boston Pops Esplanade Orchestra.
I have a question. I mean, you are a young man, and you have a very prestigious...
Thank you. Less than I was when I started, by the way.
it's wonderful that you succeeded John Williams, of course, who was quite a name in his own right. But how did they find you?
They started looking several years before the public knew that John was making other plans. They already knew that John was going to move away from the conductorship of the ensemble, and they started looking in the profession. And the thing is, it's a very small profession. At a certain level, at that point, I was the associate conductor of Cincinnati Symphony and the Cincinnati Pops for Eric Kunzel. So once you get to a certain level in the profession, everybody in the profession, pretty much for good or for bad, knows what you're doing and how you're doing it. And that was the point at which people started putting my name into the ring, and I just started showing up amongst many new faces there and guest conducting over a space of about 2.5 years. And mercifully, fortunately for me, I was the one left standing at the end.
You're a pianist, is that right?
By training, yes. I hesitate to call myself one anymore because the practicing becomes fewer and farther between. But I actually do perform a few concerts a year with my wife, and I have an ad hoc chamber music group that we put together every now and then.
In your spare time, right?
It's wonderful to, I think, to keep your hand in it, to keep remembering how to make music rather than just telling other people how to make music.
Yeah, you really just said something. I think that every conductor should participate in some level because it's a whole different approach, isn't it?
I think if you don't do that, you lose the reality of music making.
Mm-hmm.
The reality, you know, all of us came from there. I think a lot of your respect with musicians is built on them knowing that you did that, that you spent the hours beating your head against the practice room wall and trying for that really elusive technical perfection on an instrument. But if the longer you stay away from that, the more unreal your position becomes, and I think you need to. I greatly admire the people who have done both to such a high level, people like Barenboim and Eschenbach.
Again, could you tell us the difference in repertoire between the Boston Pops and the Esplanade Orchestra?
There's absolutely no difference in repertoire. As I said, they are both the Boston Pops. So we expect them to play the same concerts for the same kind of crowds at the same level. So basically, it's whatever we're this year, both orchestras have been heavily focused on Richard Rodgers, as well as, we just actually came back with the Esplanade Orchestra from Japan about 3 weeks ago. And that concert was, as the Japanese generally like in their concerts, a very Arthur Fiedler-like, European-like classical concert with Firebird and Sorcerer's Apprentice and that sort of thing. So, again, it's the versatility angle. We've also introduced this year a Baby Boomer concert with this orchestra that involves Carole King and the Beatles and YMCA.
You are a lot of fun. I must tell you, even your photos, there's an energy and an excitement and a freshness. It's delightful.
Certainly.
Thanks for giving us so much of your precious time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Crossover on WRTI. I'd like to welcome today Eric Kunzel, who has made the Cincinnati Pops Orchestra one of the most outstanding, if not the most outstanding, Pops Orchestra in our country. Welcome to Crossover.
Thank you, Joe.
You certainly have reached everyone around the world, and I must say that for a Pops Orchestra, you have created the most unusual niche for yourself. You've achieved a level of excellence that I don't think has been reached by any other Pops Orchestra, certainly in my lifetime, except perhaps the Boston Pops.
You're a very knowledgeable person.
Well, really, the excellence of the performance and the arrangements, and it's really fantastic what you have done with the Pops. And I just wondered, the Pops, I think, was part of the heritage of the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra in a sense, wasn't it? I mean, they always played Pops concerts at some point.
Yes, we're founded in 1894, but early in our career as a symphony orchestra, Leopold Stokowski was hired, and I think it was 1909. This was his first major orchestra in this country after he came over from England. He first started in New York City as an organist. In any case, Leopold Stokowski, around 1910, 1911, he began conducting not only the classical concerts, but he introduced Cincinnati to Pops concerts. So it's a long tradition starting from Leopold Stokowski right to the present day.
But the Pops concerts that were played in the early part of the 20th century were, the music was very, very different, I think, than what you're doing now.
Well, generally speaking, of course, Pops music has changed. When we think of the really first Pops concert in world history, I would probably say that they were from the Strauss people, from the father, and from Johann Strauss Jr., the famous one.
Yes.
And also Joseph Lana in Vienna. They played not only their own music, but they played the popular music of the day, whether it was Rossini or whatever. A lot has happened in classical music and in popular music, and the melding or the crossover, as you say, of the two. And so the repertoire is enormous. The Pops Orchestra has far more repertoire than a symphony orchestra. The simple reason, Pops means the word popular. It's just a diminutive. So you can take a Bach air, or you can take a Beethoven march or something like that and put it in a Pops concert, and it fits, you know, if it's programmed correctly. So the repertoire of a Pops orchestra can be anything from ballet and opera to rock, to swing, to Broadway, to movies, you name it. And so it's a Pops symphonic field has changed enormously in the last 100 years.
Yes, I was going to say that I think that they did touch on Broadway at some point years ago, but there were always standards, you know, like certain overtures that were popular, but they were classical works. Now, of course, movie music has been validated as being, you know, recognized as music, you know, as good music. And I think you've certainly capitalized on that in this very, very new album, which is stunning, where you play themes from some of the films.
Well, when the film industry started, of course, the first talkie was the Jolson movie in 1927. Since that time, the producers and directors recognize the importance of music in films, and such great people as Bernard Herrmann, Max Steiner, Erich Wolfgang von Korngold, they came over to this country, and of course they set the standards for the music that was put into music, and it was very high standards right at the beginning. And it is to this day when we have such great composers as John Williams, who has really devoted his life to writing such fantastic films as the Star Wars episodes, and of course all those films that he's done for Steve Spielberg. It's a really fine, very difficult, and very interesting art form to write for films.
You have wonderful players. Are they all from the Cincinnati Symphony?
Yes, in fact, the symphony, I think, is something like 98 players. The Pops is, I think, 101, because we add a drum set, we add electric guitar, banjo, we have electric. In other words, we add the rhythm section to the regular symphony.
Right. Yes, and I must ask you, have you changed the arrangers through the years? Because the arrangements now are spectacular. They really are.
Well, I like to stay as current in, let's call it, symphonic pop sound as possible. I have several fantastic arrangers. I'll let off with my assistant, Steve Reinecke, who's also a composer, and Joe Price. They're both stationed here in Cincinnati. But through the years, I've used many, such as Richard Heyman, all over, Eric Knight. I've used Don Sobieski in New York.
Yes.
Robert Wendell. So I've used, it depends upon what I want. If I want something very impressionistic and beautiful, a Sondheim type of thing, I would use Don Sobieski. You know, it depends upon what I want. But most of the time, everything is done right here in-house in Cincinnati. And I've got my great team, and I'm very proud of them.
Well, now you've had some disciples as well. Was it Keith Lockhart who worked with you for a while? Was he an assistant conductor?
Yes, he was my assistant here in Cincinnati for 6 years before he went to Boston.
So to the Boston.
I'm very proud of what they call my son. He calls me Dad. So.
We interviewed
I'm
him.
Proud
here.
Of him.
I interviewed him here, and he did tell me that he had worked with Cincinnati, and I wasn't aware of that. But of course, his personality is very different, and I guess the Boston Pops is again very much involved in doing the kind of thing, of course, that you do. But when we think of Pops now, I think it's the Cincinnati Pops. You have numerous recordings out. How many are there?
On Telarc alone, our next album will be our 75th with Telarc. But before Telarc, we recorded with others. So we have done since the beginning of the Cincinnati Pops, which was officially established in 1977, we've done about 100 recordings.
How do you do that in this day and age of the difficulty of getting recording contracts? You are a magician.
Well, you know, we started with the Telarc firm way back, and that's embryonic beginnings in 1978 when we did that now standard classic to test all sound systems, namely the 1812. We started in 78 with them, and then we signed an exclusive contract, and I believe that we, the Symphony and the Cincinnati Pops, are the only orchestra that have been that are still under contract with a major label.
You are a hometown orchestra and very, very devoted to Cincinnati. And I wonder now, you've expanded, though. You must tour. And I think you played in Carnegie Hall not too long ago. Is that right?
Yes, we were there earlier this year. Actually, we go to Carnegie Hall every other year, and we've been doing that for about the last 15, 20 years. We've taken the orchestra abroad, like in the in the 1990s, I believe we took the Cincinnati Pops to the Orient four different times. We're a traveling orchestra. I know, we've done this, which I'm very proud of, this so-called holiday series for PBS, where we've done a special one for Halloween, we've done one for Thanksgiving, one for Christmas, one for New Year's, one for Valentine's Day, and so forth. So we've also had that ongoing experience to do all these TV shows.
Now, you were you conducted the Cincinnati Symphony initially, didn't you, when you first came to Cincinnati?
Yes, this is my 38th season here. I've first started in 1965, before you were born, and
well,
here I am
you still.
I mean, it's very rare that you have a conductor that's lasted for 38 years with one orchestra in this world.
Now, you were an assistant to Pierre Monteux, is that right?
Yes, in the final 2 years of his life, in 1963 and 64, I was his personal assistant. I, of course, had studied with him for several, at his conducting school in Maine for several summers. I started, in fact, in 1956 when I was at Dartmouth College, and then I became his personal assistant. This was really my education because I'd never gone to a conservatory or anything like that. I went from graduate at Dartmouth, then I did 1 year of graduate school at Harvard, and then I got an assistantship at Brown University where I eventually got my master's degree. So I was never in a conservatory setting. So I really benefited so much from being Monteux's assistant, and he was a fabulous conductor. And in fact, he conducted the Philadelphia Orchestra so many, many times.
Well, of course, he was outstanding, one of the greats. Did you ever feel, because you didn't go to conservatory, that that you had to perhaps overachieve?
No, well, you know, there's other people that have gone, well, Lenny Bernstein, he was just a product of Harvard, for example. Well, I went there too. I feel I got a very broad education, which has served me well, particularly in the pops field.
So it was a metamorphosis for you from being a conductor on the podium with a symphony orchestra to kind of branching out gradually and then achieving another status, in a sense, I would say, because after all, again, the pops name for the orchestra or an orchestra does, you know, kind of conjure up a certain, I don't know, a certain image.
I really was trained early on as a classical conductor. As when I graduated from Dartmouth in 57, that summer I made my professional debut with the Santa Fe Opera Company in its first season. And of course, I went back there many times. So I was really classically trained. Now, what happened when I got to Cincinnati in 65, I was put in charge of what they call the 8 o'clock pop series. In fact, my first soloist was Dave Brubeck in October of 65, and I didn't know who in the world Dave Brubeck was. It shows you my ignorance in the pops field. So, but I quickly learned, and so, you know, that part of me then developed, and I feel very comfortable doing pops concerts. And I think if you feel comfortable and you're happy doing them and you want to do them, that's what you should do.
Another question, how do you arrive at the subject matter for your your albums, for instance? You've got diversified, you know.
Well, our primary premise at Cincinnati Pops is to reach as broad an audience as possible, so that there are some that like Broadway, some that like opera, some that like ballet, some that like musicals, some that like swing, some that like jazz, some that like Viennese. It just goes on and on. And so we've got Western albums, we've got young people's albums, we've got country album, you name it, and we've done it. We've got a Celtic album, we've got an Americana album, we're doing a ballet album coming out, to the best of all the ballets. So I think that's the secret behind a great part of our success, is the variety that we have. For example, now we've just released our last three albums were a swing album with Pizzarelli and the Manhattan Transfer, etc. The next one was a Celtic celebration, completely different. And then there's this Epic Movies that is just out now and forthcoming on February of this fourth year, classics unleashed, all the great things that takes extra brass, like the Pines of Rome, the Festive Overture, the Polka and Fugue from Shavanda, the Aida, and all that sort of stuff. So we get these big classicals, so it's called Classics Unleashed. So there's our most recent four albums. Every one of them will reach a different audience.
And reach a different audience and also teach a different audience, which mm-hmm. I think is really wonderful. What are your plans? And that, of course, is an ongoing question. You will be conducting, as you say, on tour. You will be conducting the Pops, or will you also be conducting other orchestras?
I can. For instance, I'm here in Cincinnati this week doing five concerts. Next week, I'm conducting the Mexico City Philharmonic Orchestra. The following week, I'll be conducting the Naples Philharmonic. The following week, I think it's Toronto and Detroit in that order. So, I mean, I'm continuously all over the place.
Are they Pops concerts that you conduct when you do other orchestras?
Yes, generally speaking, they are. I did do 12 performances with San Francisco Opera last year, but it's rare that you find me anymore in the opera pit because it takes too long, you know, the preparation and then the residency. Besides, I love doing Pops concerts, so that's
I love that you are and don't stop because it's a wonderful source of delight for all of us. And I thank you so much for taking your time, and there's very little of it, I'm sure, with your schedule, to speak with us today on Crossover, Eric Kunzel.
Well, thank you, Jill. I wish I could hear you play harp someday, and maybe that'll come true. And
good luck
to everybody at WRTI, and thank you very much.
Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.